This is Carmen and Yurko on ESPN 1000.
See what we're up to.
See them on Twitch at ESPN 1000 Chicago.
Today, as you may or may not know, it doesn't matter, is the opening of the World Series. What I'd like to suggest is that we change the work detail tonight so that we can watch the ball game.
Well, Mr. McMurphy, what you're asking is that we change a very carefully worked out schedule.
A little change never hurt, huh? A little variety?
Well, it's not necessarily true, Mr. McMurphy. You know, some men on the ward take a long, long time to get used to the schedule. Change it now, and they might find it very disturbing.
Well, I mean, they can go back to the schedule after the series. I'm talking about the World Series, Nurse Reggie.
Randall Patrick McMurphy, also known as R.P. McMurphy, played, of course, by Jack Nicholson in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. Yurko, one of your favorites, right?
Oh,
I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I love that movie, absolutely. The whole thing, Randall Patrick McMurphy, right?
Mm-hmm. Correct.
RPM, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you got Nurse Ratched.
Yes.
Right? Ratched.
Correct.
Mechanical, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think the name of the place, I forget what the name of the place is. But it's got something mechanical to do with it. Just basically how everybody was cogs in the machinery
mm-hmm.
and stuff like that. And everybody was treated as such.
Yes.
That's the backdrop to that whole thing. Me and Dick Geron once had a conversation about this.
Really?
Where we went in depth into One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. And he started drawing these things out to kind of get me to, you know what? I never even thought about that, I told him.
That's how you know it's a...
I said, Dick, I never thought about that
mm-hmm.
at all.
And you were talking to Dick Geron.
Dick Geron, Coach Geron.
Mm-hmm.
Former head coach of the Chicago Bears.
Yes. So. And I will say, too, since we're on it ever so briefly, I mentioned that I mentioned to you guys way back when, Carm watched it when I suggested the series on Netflix, Ratched, is really, really good. Highly recommended. A little dark, as One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest clearly is as well, but Ratched is kind of a look into how Nurse Ratched became who she was in that movie.
She was maniacal, guys. She
absolutely.
Was maniacal.
So, but we always like to play that clip on the opening of the World Series, the first game of the World Series, which begins tonight. You can hear it right here on ESPN 1000 as the Braves take on the Houston Astros. They are at Houston tonight, and our intrepid baseball reporter, Jesse Rogers, is in Houston as well. He joins us now on the Carmen and Yurko Show with Jeff Meller in for Carm. Jesse, what's the lay of the land like down in Texas?
Well, let me start with this. And I got to ask Yurko a question here first.
Oh, please do.
I've been on the road, you know, since the beginning of the ALCS. So Houston, Boston, I stayed in Houston after they clinched, right? So when I left, the Blackhawks were like, you know, I don't know, maybe 0-1. I don't remember what it was, but they were excited about their season.
They had lost.
What in God's name is going on? Now they have COVID, and I think they're going to announce some of the findings of their investigation, you know, that off-ice stuff from 10 years ago. Yurko, what the hell is going on with the Blackhawks?
Oh, they're bad. They are bad. I don't know. Carlton handed the grease board over to the guys and let them design a play the other day.
Yes. I never saw that before.
Yeah, just here, guys.
There's a serious question. Why wouldn't you clean house, hand the keys to Eddie O for, even if you want to call him interim, and I'm not talking about coach, I'm talking about like head of hockey operations. I think the guy had interviews before the pandemic. It's not like it'd be out of the blue. A lot of former players come, you know, down to be an executive. Hand him the keys on an interim basis. Let him do something because
all right,
this happened upstairs. This is not on the ice. This was upstairs.
Right. Of course it was. Of course we know what the problems are.
And the results are what's happening.
We know what
the
problems are. The youngster from the Lucky Sperm Club got the keys to the Cadillac, and he's been crashing the thing into the walls ever since.
Disaster.
I don't know why you're looking to panic in this situation. I mean, they've only played six games. They've got 1 point.
Well, they haven't.
They're minus 15 in, you know,
they've
a
set
goal
the,
differential.
They've set the NHL record for the longest time to begin a season without having a lead in a game, which is still currently
I mean, are those telltale
intact.
Signs that we might be having problems up there?
Well, at least you have the Bulls.
Well, they made the wrong choice when they made the choice. It's been going downhill ever since then. Okay. You've missed your window to be able to trade Kane and Taves, so now you're stuck with those two guys. And I do mean stuck. aging players like Datsyuk and Zetterberg when you could have got something of value for you and started to rebuild. Yeah. Instead, Detroit held on to them forever while they were not making the playoffs.
Well, but think about this moment right now. A terrible on-ice product, a scandal, a terrible scandal about to hit the fan, mm-hmm. you know what. A COVID outbreak, apparently, right? I just saw tapes. I mean, are you kidding me? How do you not clean house just because of all of that? Anyway, let's talk about the World
Series. Well, I'll brighten your day. At least they finally found that top-tier defenseman, inked him to a long-term contract. And if they end up picking highly, say it's not in the top two, it happens to be third or fourth, they'll get to send that draft pick to Columbus for the opportunity to go ahead and sign Seth Jones.
Yeah,
so at least they got that going for them, too.
And he's under contract for till 2030.
Yes.
And he's only like minus 15 after five games.
So you really did yourself a favor by tying yourself into a defenseman whose ratings have been slipping for the last 3 years. Nice job. Great work up there.
All right.
And then wonder why. Oh, the other thing, too. 535 straight sellouts. That ended.
Yes.
That ended.
Against Detroit.
Yeah.
You had Detroit at home, and you couldn't sell out that game.
Yeah. So, yeah, no, things are looking up over there.
Woo. So
man, I wish they were on our station. Wow.
Here's my next question. Is anybody rooting for Houston? Or is everybody
No, I'm rooting for Houston.
Are you really?
Yeah, I love Houston.
I'm with Yurko,
Nobody
actually.
Nobody finds out what happened if they don't cooperate. Okay, and as part of cooperating, those guys got immunity. That's the way it works. The people that were supposed to be punished got punished. And that was the higher-ups because they were supposed to police the situation, and they didn't. So the whole narrative is crap on the Houston Astros. I'm cheering for Houston. I hope they sweep Atlanta out of this thing, claim a championship so they can go and flip the bird to every Major League Baseball fan out there that's a pompous ass.
I'll add this, too, before you comment, Jess. Maybe I was not as offended as everybody else, but the truth is, like, the way I look at it, I don't think it's much different than the steroids era. Houston was doing exactly what a lot of teams in baseball were doing. They were doing their best. You know, listen, MLB can, you know, make them the bad guys, or like they tried to do. But the truth is, Rob Manfred and MLB are the ones responsible for not taking action sooner. I don't care how they won their title. It's not like the Dodgers haven't been accused of some shenanigans of their own. So truth is, I'm not that offended by the fact that they won the World Series, too.
Those are good points. They really are. It sort of reminds me of the steroid era. I mean, would you focus on one or two players only? That would be stupid, right?
Mm-hmm.
There were so many doing. And you're right. There were so many teams doing, let's just say, similar. Now, I don't know if they were going to the extent of the Astros. That's never been truly proven. Though Boston, LA, New York, there were a lot of rumors about all those teams. So you guys might be right. Plus, there's only like three players left over. But it's the big three. It's Correa, it's Bregman, and Altuve. Jordan Alvarez, Kyle Tucker, they weren't here when all that went down. So you can hate on the Astros, but I'll tell you what. Yurko, you're right. If they win, they are going to flip the bird because they will say, they will say, look, we won legally. We didn't need to cheat. It reminds me of Bonds. Like, he was a Hall of Famer without the steroids, right?
Yep.
But, you know, they took advantage of the moment and they got caught and they paid the price, and they certainly do on the road, and they will in Atlanta. But if they win, they will have proven something, obviously.
You mentioned Carlos Correa there, and I know a lot of Chicago fans, not just Cubs fans, but even White Sox fans, have thrown out the notion or idea of potentially trying to sign him. What do you think Carlos Correa's future is in free agency? Do you think he'll be the most sought-after free agent out there? Or because of the potential issues with the CBA, do you think we're in for a long, cold winter where all the free agents are left out there dangling?
Well, a lot of them are left dangling anyway, even in a normal year.
True.
It takes
the big guys.
Yeah, no, even they go a long time. But my point is, I don't think the CBA is going to affect the big guys either way.
Mm-hmm.
They could sign early if that is in the cards, or it could go late. Most of the time it goes late for the big guys anyway. I mean, which big name signs in early November? It just doesn't happen. So I'm not sure the CBA is really going to affect them. But either way, those negotiations usually go past the winter meetings, or at least until the winter meetings. But there's going to be a game of musical chairs with those shortstops. I would be surprised if the White Sox got into that. I mean, they still need a left-handed bat. If they're going to throw their money around, it's got to be for a left-handed bat. The Cubs are a different story, right? They need a star or two on the north side. I think Detroit's going to get a shortstop. I think Texas is going to get a shortstop. You know, well, Trey Turner's probably going to move back over to shortstop because Seager's going to move on. The Cubs could use a shortstop. I don't know if they're going to throw the big money around right away. They keep saying they're going to make thoughtful decisions.
Is that code for we don't want to spend?
Yeah, oh yeah, that's code.
I've never seen a cup team draw if they're not winning or don't have a couple stars. And right now, they're not winning and don't have a couple stars. So I think they absolutely need to go get
it. I mean, they've got Contreras. Don't people still love Contreras?
That's not enough. That's not enough.
So you're not buying the hype that Cubs fans are in a fervor for Frank Schwindel just yet?
Merkin
every day tells us about Frank Schwindel.
Great he is. And the wisdom of it all.
Yeah, exactly. No, I mean, to really draw the way they like to draw, you need a couple star players, MVP caliber players. Carlos Correa would fit that bill. He led all position players in WAR this year, by the way.
Yep.
I think people realize what a good year Carlos Correa had. Was great against the White Sox in the playoffs, cooled off last round. I'm actually writing a big piece on him for tomorrow.
Oh, nice.
He's become this huge leader on this team as well, maybe timed out perfectly for free agency. But you're talking about Trevor Story, Seager, Correa. I mean, the Cubs should get one of them, right? But I'm not positive that they will. Look out for the Tigers, man. A.J. Hinch, Correa connection, that could, you know, they're an up-and-coming team. They're going to get one of the shortstops. And I believe the Rangers will as well. So there's two teams. The Yankees could get one of them. There's three. So you'd like to see the Cubs jump in. But there's no guarantees because they're at the beginning of their rebuild. But I will tell you, Correa told me in my interview with him, he has no problem going to a rebuilding team as long as it's the right one and, you know, doing the right thing. So I think the Cubs would absolutely be on his radar.
Jesse, you talk with a lot of people around baseball. I'm curious. And I was in with Waddle on Friday, and I was asking him, the way the game is, it obviously makes sense analytically to lean on your bullpen heavily in the playoffs here. But aesthetically for the viewers out there, you know, when we're talking about 3.5-plus-hour games, and even if it may be, you know, if you're rooting for the team, that's one thing. But for all the casual observers, I don't know if there even are casual observers of baseball these days, if your team's not in the World Series. But is baseball broken beyond repair with the way pitching changes are approached in the modern era?
It's not broken beyond repair. There are moves that could be made. I mean, the easiest one, and this is Theo's idea, is to start to reduce the number of pitchers on the pitching staff. Limit it to 12, then down to 11. Heck, maybe even to 10, but it's going to take a long time because you got to train your pitchers again. If you limit your pitching staff, it forces you to let your starters go longer. You're so right about the aesthetics, though. My favorite game covering this ALCS was the game where Framber Valdez went 8 innings. You know, a 3-2 game with 10 pitching changes isn't as interesting as a 3-2 game where a starter goes 7 or 8. That's the beauty of the game, or it has been for a long, long time. And I think
conversely, you know, if you're a baseball fan, it sucks when you think you're going to get Max Scherzer or even Walker Buehler, and, you know, maybe they can go out and gut out a performance and lead their team to victory. And no, they're only going to get you 3 2/3 or 4 innings.
Yeah, it's just not fun to watch. That's why I say the Valdez start. Framber Valdez, not the biggest name or anything, but 8 innings, 1-run ball against the Red Sox. It was a master class of pitching. You know, him and Maldonado working the Red Sox lineup, this dangerous lineup. So, yeah, they know this. They have to work towards getting to the right, you know, place to go back to those starters going longer. But it's going to take retraining pitchers in the minors. They're just not trained the same way. And letting them come up as starters, not even as relievers, and then maybe working them into the rotation like, you know, Kopech and Crochet are probably going to do. It's just the mindset has to change and the rules are probably going to have to change. Limiting the number of pitchers on a staff is probably the best way to do it. There's probably other ways, but that's the best way to do it.
All right, Jess. Valdez is on the mound tonight for Houston. It's Charlie Morton against Framber Valdez in Houston. You can hear that game right here on ESPN 1000. First pitch at 7:09. Does Dusty Baker get his first World Series title as a manager?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, this is kind of a well-oiled machine. I mean, he hasn't had to do a lot with this team. Just kind of roll him out there and let him play, where I think Snitker's done a lot more with Atlanta's situation, revamping that team midseason. I do think the fact that they got past last round without Lance McCullers tells me they can get past this one. The Red Sox had a quintessential American League lineup, and they shut them down those last three games. I don't see why that won't continue. Of course, it's a new series. Anything can happen. But there's a reason Valdez, Garcia, Urquidy, these guys were as good as they were during the regular season. They have great, great stuff. They just had to get over that McCullers injury, and they did that. So I do think they shut down the Braves. I mean, the Braves, you got to give them credit, but this is not the best of their 3 or 4 year run here. This is not their best team. I think Houston's going to win it. But look, Atlanta took down the Dodgers, so anything can happen. Let's not forget that. I do like the under tonight, Yurko. I will say that. I think Morton is as good as it gets in the playoffs, and Valdez is rolling. I do like the under for you, Yurko.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah.
There you go. Maybe make a play. All right, Jess, enjoy the Lone Star State. I'm sure we'll be talking to you soon.
Yep, you got it, guys. Take care. See you, Yurk.
All right, kid.
Jesse Rogers covering baseball for us here on ESPN 1000. Again, Atlanta Braves taking on the Houston Astros. You can hear the World Series right here on ESPN 1000. First pitch again tonight at 7:09. I'm Jeff Meller in for Carmen DeFalco. He's Yurko, Carmen and Yurko. The Bulls did something they haven't done since the 90s. I'll tell you what it is next.
Listening to Carmen and Yurko
on Chicago's home for sports.
ESPN 1000. Don't miss a minute of Carmen and Yurko. Tell your smart speaker to play ESPN 1000.
DeRozan, what a pass to Caruso on the ball!
AC with the back cut.
Zach LaVine, 4 points all at the free throw line. Here's LaVine for three. Kobe.
Oh, bang, bang, bang.
No foul on the play, a kickball violation. LaVine in traffic. Oh, he still buries a three on a step back. Barnes guarding. DeRozan fires. It connects.
That's why he's here, ladies and gentlemen.
DeRozan away from the screen. Spin cycle again. DeRozan!
He's got spin cycle.
Vucevic posting against Barnes. Three to shoot. Out to LaVine. Deep three. Big one. Got it!
Oh, all the way from Rockford, Illinois. Clear out. Just let him go.
One of the best isolation players in the game. Overtrain. Yes, sir! Oh,
Compton's in the house. Woo!
Yeah! Highlights courtesy of NBC Sports Chicago, Adam Amin and Stacey King on the call there. The Bulls moved to 4-0 for the first time since 1996, Yurko. A young man named Michael Jeffrey Jordan was playing for the Bulls back then. Quite an impressive feat. They are now one of only three teams remaining in the NBA who are undefeated.
That's round two for Michael Jordan, too.
It was indeed. It was the year that they would go on to win their second championship, their fifth overall, but their second in a row, in the second incarnation of Michael of the Michael Jordan era. So quite the feat, moving to 4-0 now.
Well, good for them. That's a good Toronto team they ended up beating up there. You know, they took the lead. They were very aggressive in the second quarter, scoring some points. And you'd like to see him finish the game a little bit better than they finished the game. I mean, he had a good look at that three to tie that thing up at the end of the game.
Mm-hmm.
Vooch did the best he could on a young man that was trying to do the jitterbug out there by the three-point line. But, you know, he got a good shot up, just a little bit long. Hey, finished the games a little bit better, but who's complaining? Is anybody complaining about what they're seeing out of the Chicago Bulls right now?
It's fantastic to watch a team that you can actually have playoff hopes for. And granted, the competition, maybe it hasn't been that stiff just yet.
Not yet.
But you know what? You got to take advantage and win the games that you can that are on your schedule. And it's nice to see the Bulls get off to a very good start. And I'll tell you what, even in the post game, on the right after the game, Zach LaVine joined Adam Amin and Stacey King, and he was not going to let the victory get in the way of some, you know, being critical of the team's performance down the stretch.
Zach, this is the first true test of the season that you guys received. How do you feel you guys responded late in this game?
We didn't do our job late. You know, a win's a win and we'll take it, but, you know, we were controlling most of the game after the first quarter, and, you know, we let them play themselves back into the game. You know, they start getting a lot more physical. They start driving us. And, you know, I think we have to work better at that, closing out the game, because, you know, it definitely should have ended with a one-possession game at the end with a chance to tie it.
Well, Zach, this is a new situation, you know, for you, this team from last year. This is not the same team. And what I was seeing in the last 3 minutes of that game is just you kind of lost your composure a little bit, kind of lost what you guys were trying to do. But it's a learning experience. You got to learn how to win. And these are kind of games you got to close out, and you guys got the win anyway.
Yeah, no, I mean, we got three guys out there that actually had the ball at the end of the game. And we just got to figure out, you know, what time and what space and how to get it going there. So, obviously, got cut down the turnovers. But, you know, win's a win. We'll look at the film and get ready for the next one.
He mentioned that the turnovers, I think they had 7 in the fourth quarter, if I'm not mistaken. Billy Donovan in the postgame press conference also said they need to be better taking care of the ball and not allow the Raptors to get into back into that game. But it was good to see them close out the win in a game that it was nice to see them actually to jump out. They were up 10 at halftime.
Right.
They pushed it to 20 fairly quickly into the third quarter. That's what you need to do, and yes, you'd like to see them close a little bit stronger, but when you give yourself that cushion, you can go ahead and have a sloppy fourth quarter, and because of what the work you did early, still be able to sustain and get yourself a victory.
Well, and you've got options. You
yes.
know, you've got options. When they traded for Vooch, what are they doing? You know, you got Levine, you got Vooch, and then DeMar DeRozan.
Yes.
There's three for you.
He was excellent down the stretch.
Yeah, who's my headband guy?
Alex Caruso.
He's coming off the bench, giving you a little bit of a pop. You've got to like that. Slash.
The crowd is chanting MVP when Alex Caruso gets to the line.
Well, listen, they love the guy. But that second time.
A little reminiscent of Nocioni.
Yes.
The Noch chants.
Andres.
Crowd
Nocioni.
Favorite.
Nocioni. Oh, yeah. I remember Noch. Noch was fantastic. But the slashing, the cutting, the defense. This is what he gives you. He gives you that defense. A nice little pop for you. And you've got scoring options, which is great. That's what you're looking for, having some different options. And you're getting the ball and you're moving the ball. You're getting it up court. You're getting it up court. You're pushing the pace, trying to get yourself shots. Easy shots is what you're looking for. Open shots is what you're looking for. I'd like to see Vooch be a little more efficient around the basket.
Sure.
Seems to me that he's missing a little bit more on those little baby hooks.
Yes.
And little things he's got going on. A little bit more efficient around the basket. But that's all. No complaints as you move forward here. Finish the game. Learn how to win. This is still a team trying to come together.
Yeah.
You know, to me, it's still a bunch of strangers trying to come together and figure everything out. So I like what I see. You know you're going to have playoff basketball. If they finish 500 the rest of the year, they're 43-39. They're in the playoffs, right?
Sure.
43-39 in the East gets the team into the playoffs.
I would think so. 43 wins.
If you play 500 the rest of them.
Yeah, yeah. And 43 wins probably gets you right in that play-in range, though.
I think you're in the seventh. I think you're a seventh or eighth seed.
But that's
not
six.
I meant sad. Sixth seed.
They'll have to get, you know, you'd have to get to six to avoid that
right.
play-in
Go
round.
Go back historically and take a look. I think 43-39 might still capture it at sixth seed for you. If you look at last year.
Last year, remember, they were shortened, so I'd have to do the percentage,
the math.
Yeah, which, you know, on the fly is never. So last season, the Miami Heat were 40-32. They were the sixth seed.
And what
now,
was
the
next?
Fall off was all the way to 36-36. That was the next
it.
Team. So there was quite
you.
A significant drop off from the Heat to the Celtics last season. But traditionally, 43, you know, you're going to be around that 6-7 range. So I'd like to see, hopefully, the Bulls can play better than 500 ball the rest of the way here. Don't get our hopes up.
I'm just
up.
Saying if they play 500,
sure, no,
maybe
I know. Is it
basketball.
Is it too much to ask, though, if after this good start? To expect them to be a better than 500
I think
ball
you
club?
Would. I think you would.
Yeah, I mean,
I think 47 is where they settle in at nicely.
Yeah, and if they hit 47 wins, they will certainly be out of the play-in range, which is, I think that should be the goal.
Yes.
Like, sure, the play-in tournament would be, you've elevated from where you were last season when you were 31-41, but they made significant moves, not just with the Vooch trade, but also the addition of DeMar DeRozan, the addition of Lonzo Ball, Alex Caruso, they went, I would say, for the most part, all in to try and make sure that this is a competitive basketball team. And so avoiding the play-in tournament, I think, should be the number one goal. You want to get to that top six seeds and make sure that you're in the playoffs and you don't have to play through the play-in game. Because, you know, one game could easily, you know, you could easily be bounced if you're in that play-in tournament. So get out of that. Get to the sixth seed at the least. I think that should be the goal this year. We'll see too once Kobe White gets back. I'll be curious to see. You mentioned you noted you were looking through the box score before the show started. Io didn't get off the bench last night.
Yeah,
I wonder. You know, and I wasn't too surprised because the truth is, once even Kobe White gets back onto this roster, I'll say I will have an even more difficult time getting onto the floor. So, but it's nice to have options on the bench that you can turn to if needed. So. All in all, I am very excited, more so than I have been about the Bulls in a long, long time. And it's, you know, at 4-0, first time since 1996, it's nice to see them actually reward fans who are excited about this team
well,
to start the year.
Arturas, we're trying to figure out when and where he was going to put his finger on the team.
Mm-hmm.
He started.
Yeah.
At what point did he say to himself, all right, I've seen enough of what I have.
Yep.
And now I got to change it. And that's what he went about the business of doing.
Yep.
He got rid of the guys that he didn't think were going to be a part of this team's future, and he kept the one guy he thought it was.
Sure.
Right?
Yep.
Kept the one guy he thought he was, got rid of everything else.
For the most part, you're absolutely correct. And, you know, kudos to him, too, because he was able to actually get something from marketing. A lot of people didn't think that was realistic. He was able to get himself a first-round pick back. So, like, kudos to everything I've seen from Arturas Karnišovas, I've been impressed by, for the most part. You know, you got to give him a little time. We'll see what happens with Zach.
And he works on his schedule. He's not working on anybody else's
as
schedule.
As it should be, right?
Yeah, he was working on his schedule. I'm not looking to impress anybody. I've got to analyze what I have. I got to figure out what I have, give it enough time to see what's going on, and then I can go ahead and do what I'm going to do. And it was a play in three parts, you know. I could do some now. I got to do some in the offseason. We'll see what we get in the draft. It was a play in three parts. It was going to happen overnight. And hopefully now Bulls fans can look at this team and say, yes, we've got something going on. And I might actually go to a Bulls game.
Maze, and listen, they're exciting. And watching Zach LaVine in person, he's one of the more exciting players to go and see.
Sure.
Like, if you're going to price of admission, Zach LaVine is amongst the players in the NBA. You know, just off the top of my head, like, I think he's in the top 20 players of guys you would pay money to go see these days. Granted, the defense still needs
and
work.
And that's different than top 20 players overall.
Exactly. No.
Top 20 that you'd go see play is different.
He is absolutely one of the top 20 players who's worth price of admission. And I will say, too, Kendall Gill was breaking it down in the postgame, and I agree with him. Zach LaVine doing some work defensively, too. He's doing a good job of closing players off, and I'm encouraged to see that because my criticism of Zach LaVine has always been, I don't know if he can be the best player on your roster if you want to make a deep run in the playoffs, but if he continues to do what he does, he's been doing defensively, maybe, just maybe, he can be.
You know, Kendall Gill was an Olympian.
I do.
Ridge Central Olympian.
Flying a line?
Yeah, not actually in the Olympics, but an Olympian at Ridge Central.
Oh, okay.
That's their nickname.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
There you go.
Guys,
not real quick.
I did not know
Not
that.
The Olympics, but an Olympian at Ridge Central.
There you go.
By the way, just to change the subject, this is from Scott Powers.
Mm-hmm.
The Blackhawks will hold a press briefing at 1 p.m. to discuss the findings of the independent investigation conducted by Jenner and Block. Rocky Wirtz and Danny Wirtz are scheduled to talk.
Okay, we will monitor that. The question is, will we get any real information? Will any report that's been put together by Jenner and Block, will it be released? Obviously, the Washington football team had a report of their own put in place that has not been made public. So,
except John Gruden's emails were made public.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes,
Gruden's emails were made public.
Yes, yes. So the question is, will the findings that Jenner and Block have come to, will any report that they've given to Rocky Wirtz be made public? That will be the real question to me, because if so, then it maybe has a little bit more credibility, or will they just address it publicly without releasing the findings? That will be interesting. We'll find more out about that at 1 o'clock. All right. It is Tuesday. It is 11:30. You know what that means. Right around this time, right after the break, I will give you the waiver wire pickups for week 8. We'll do that next on the Carmen Yurko Show.
You're listening to Carmen and Yurko on ESPN 1000. Follow at Carmen DeFalco and at Yurko64 on Twitter.
Carmen and Yurko on ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
If you're a player of the fantasy football, Yurko, this is your time of the week. Every Tuesday on Carmen and Yurko, I, Jeff Meller, give you the best waiver wire pickups ahead of your waiver wire acquisition period. Generally, most leagues run their waivers on Tuesday evening into Wednesday morning, so that's why we do it at this time. And this week, I'm going to let folks know, Yurk, it is not a great week.
No.
For waivers.
No, it's bad.
It's pretty ugly. The names I'm going to throw out here are not going to, in all likelihood, help you win your league. If anything,
could it position you in the future with somebody that might be a little bit of banged up?
Yeah, I think.
I mean, anybody on the Bears would be like somebody you don't want because they don't score points.
Yeah, and at this point, we gave out Khalil Herbert a few weeks back. And hopefully people hopped on him then, because certainly at this point he should be scooped up in most competitive leagues. This week, I think the biggest find for 1 or 2 weeks is actually going to be in the Philadelphia backfield. I personally am partial to Boston Scott. A lot of folks out there are giving out Kenneth Gainwell as the guy that you want. But what this is where you have, I think, Gainwell, I think you're probably going to want to go ahead and make a claim on both, right? Chances are you're not going to get both. But if you have priority here, I guess I would make Gainwell the number one option and maybe slide Boston Scott in second in the hopes that you can get both if you want to play it that way. But if you want to be certain and you're just like, if I'm only going to get one, Boston Scott would be the guy I would be more intrigued by because of his history in Philadelphia. He has seen more carries. And when Miles Sanders went down with the ankle injury, he actually saw more carries than Kenneth Gainwell did. Gainwell is more of the passing option. So I would say Boston Scott's probably the priority
here. If
you're
in a PPR league, you might want to think about it different. If you're not in a PPR league.
No, good point. Yeah. Kenneth Gainwell's probably the guy you'll focus on if you're in a PPR league. But I think Boston Scott, at least for the next couple weeks, assuming Miles Sanders is out for 2 or 3 weeks, I think Boston Scott's probably the better start. Another guy, Samaje Perine of the Cincinnati Bengals.
You've got that right.
Samaje returned from the COVID-19 list last Sunday. He had 11 carries, I believe 52 yards, and a touchdown.
He had the big run. Pretty much gave him all his yardage was on the big run, 40-some-odd yards.
Now, what I will say is that Perine has been, with Joe Mixon dealing with his own injuries, he's been worked in a little bit, and because Mixon's been banged up, look, Mixon's playing, he's out there, and he's been productive, so you keep using him, but I think Samaje Perine is somebody worth adding to your roster in the event that Mixon it re-injures himself in any way. Perine would step in and likely be the beneficiary.
Gotcha.
You saw him play last night. He wasn't very productive, but Rashad Penny for the Seattle Seahawks got 6 carries, 9 yards. Certainly didn't love it. They struggled all night to run the ball against the Saints. Alex Collins seemed like every time he got the ball, he was running into the line. Defenders were all over him. I think Rashad Penny, who has the first-round pedigree and has had a few big games in the past, is somebody who could, you know, now that he's back from injury, like yesterday was his first game back, I think Rashad Penny could work in a little bit more. And with Chris Carson having a neck injury, no sign of return from him anytime soon, I think Rashad Penny is worth adding if he hasn't already been picked up in your league. And then finally, another running back, Selvin Ahmad of the Miami Dolphins, now with Malcolm Brown out. Miles Gaskin still the lead back, but Ahmad is somebody who is worth adding. Because, again, it's always like next man up. You talk about it all the time.
Yep.
Running back situation, if you play fantasy football, you know what this is all about. You're searching for the guy who will be the next man up. Selvin Ahmad could be somebody who is, if Gaskin goes down,
we
could
are
be
going
the guy.
Down the list of names when Ahmad.
It's not a great week.
Yeah.
A couple of wide receivers maybe considering with the Green Bay Packers. And Davante Adams on the COVID list.
COVID-19.
He is vaccinated, so if he gets 2 negative tests in 24 hours, he can return, just like Matt Nagy.
You got to keep him vaccinated.
But I will say it's probably unlikely. Everything I've seen monitoring the COVID-19 list for fantasy football throughout the year, it seems like anytime a guy gets added to that list, he usually misses at least one game. So, and with them having the Thursday game, I think it's unlikely. So in that event, Alan Lazard is the name who is available in a lot of leagues out there. He's my first option if I'm looking for a wide receiver this week. Randall Cobb as well, I think, is worth picking up because he's been like kind of the third wide receiver for them.
He gets the slot action is what he gets.
And with Marquez Valdes-Scantling also out.
Yeah, and he loves him on third down.
He does.
Aaron Rodgers loves him some Randall Cobb on third down.
So I would say Lazard's probably the first guy you want to target, but Randall Cobb is available in a lot of leagues.
In the last game, because we all had a chance to watch it, Lazard really had the one series.
He did.
He had 4 catches in one series, scored the touchdown in that series.
In the past, though, when Adams has missed games, Lazard has been a guy who Aaron Rodgers has targeted. So I think he's the guy who you want to go out and add. And Cobb, certainly worth adding if you can't get Lazard. Darius Slayton for the New York Giants. Now,
the New York football Giants.
The New York football Giants, as the folks like to call them.
Why does Slayton suddenly come to the forefront?
So, because the Giants are dealing with a ton of wide receiver issues of their own, you've got Kenny Galladay, who's been out for weeks now.
Sure.
You've got Kadarius Toney, the rookie who I love from Florida, but he is injured, and it doesn't look like with the ankle injury.
I mean, he's slightly built, isn't Kadarius Toney?
Is he
a smaller
fella? I think he's like 6'6".
That's not the guy I'm thinking of, then. If he's 6'6", I'm not
thinking not 6'6". I was going to say, I think he's like 6 foot, so it might be.
Okay.
But, you know what? He's built, I would say he's built similar to he's not as small, I don't believe, but he's got that Tyreek Hill type frame.
Yes, that's what
I think.
What
he's
we're
a little bit bigger,
about.
So it may be the guy you're thinking of. But Kadarius Toney's out with an ankle injury, which means that Darius Slayton is the likely number one option for the Giants, at least while both those guys continue to be out. Sterling Shepard also missed last week. So Darius Slayton returned to action. He had 5 catches for 63 yards. And he's somebody who, I think, against the Kansas City Chiefs on Monday Night Football this week, is somebody who you may want to look to use if you're in need of a wide receiver. Lastly, a couple of tight ends for you if you're in need. Logan Thomas may be set to return from the injured reserve soon for the Washington football team. If he was dropped by anybody in your league, go ahead and grab him before he returns so that you can be on the forefront of, be out in front of that. And then CJ Azuma of the Cincinnati Bengals, Joe Burrow has things humming. I don't love the action that Azuma is getting. Not a lot of targets, but I'll tell you what. Over the last 4 games, Yurko, you know what he's doing?
No.
Scoring touchdowns. He's got 5 touchdowns in the last 4 games. So even though he only has 13 catches,
yeah,
5 of them
five
have gone
tutties
for touchdowns.
He's having a Tonyan year.
Exactly.
It is, he's having
he's
a Tonyan year.
The Robert Tonyan, I believe.
Yeah.
Yeah. So go ahead and grab him because the Bengals are scoring a lot of points with Joe Burrow, Jamar Chase, and sometimes the tight end is the beneficiary.
What's his name?
CJ Azuma.
CJ Azuma.
So he is available in 90% of leagues out there. So there's a guy who you can add if you're looking for a solution at the tight end position. There you go.
Thank you.
There's
Appreciate
your fantasy
it.
Football waiver wire.
That's the waiver wire. I hope you guys put some of those names down, get a chance to solidify your lineup as you move forward.
And if you did not, never fear. It's available for you on the podcast as soon as the show wraps up.
How's
on
Waller?
ESPN
Is he
going
to be able to come back here?
They have the bye week.
They had a bye week. So
he injured
he's got more time to rest.
Yeah, he injured his ankle on Friday, which was a setback, and clearly he did not play this last week. They have the bye this week. Good news, only 2 teams on bye, Vegas and Baltimore
Thank
this week.
Heavens.
So we have passed Week 7, the bye weeks from hell this past week.
There's no more team byes.
As
we move forward,
I don't want
the
biggest issue. I don't know if there. I think there might be one more, but the biggest issue was that of the 6, they were all just really good fantasy teams, fantasy offenses.
Yeah, week 9 offers you 4.
Okay, I think it might be there might be one more, but I can't remember off the top of my head. So, nevertheless, we're past the worst of it. Week 7 was always going to be the worst bye week situation for fantasy players out there. All right, we'll confirm that and also weigh in on the Manning cast, which Yurko has a problem with. We'll give that to you next.
You're listening to Carmen and Yurko.
Stream ESPN 1000 easily on the all-new ESPN Chicago app.
ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
Jeff Meller sitting in for Carmen DeFalco, who is en route back from Tampa Bay as he took in the Bears debacle at the Raymond James Stadium at the Pirate Ship. Watched the Bucks thrash the beloved on Sunday. He had a little bit of a travel issue as his flight was canceled yesterday afternoon. So he is making his way back to Chicago through Philadelphia, as you would tend to do coming from South Florida, Yerk. So I, Jeff Meller, I'm sitting in for Carmen. He'll be back tomorrow. All right, and we're also, we'll be watching and listening to the Hawks press conference as they unveil the findings of the investigation that Jenner and Block put together for them, as they were commissioned to do in regards to all the horrible sexual assault allegations that were put forth. They had an independent law firm go ahead and put an investigation together, and so they will be meeting the media today at 1 o'clock. And hopefully giving us some insight as to what they found out. And we'll see if anybody is let go because of it.
Usually you'll have a sacrificial lamb here. That's what they call it.
Yes. No. Well,
will it be the right individual? You know, the
persons individuals
that are responsible.
Yes.
For a cover-up.
Mm. Yeah.
For sweeping it under the rug.
Yes.
For whatever it is that was happening at the time. And again, these are just suggestions. These
These
are not findings by me.
Correct. That'll be the biggest thing. Is
so will it be somebody that gets sacrificed, or will it be the people that were actually new and covered it up?
And will we be able to discern? Because will they make the report that Jenner and Block gave them public? That'll also be, I think, the biggest questions coming out of today's press conference at 1 o'clock today. All right, Yerk, I'm going to let folks hear from Tom Brady, who joined the Manning cast last night on ESPN2. If you were watching the ESPN broadcast, as I know you were, this is what you may, a little bit of sampling of what you may have missed from Tom Brady joining the Mannings.
Oh, by the way, congratulations on knowing how many downs in a series against the Bears. That's big improvement for you coming out of last year's game. Way to go, pal.
A lot's changing here. Just another year of experience. So, I obviously had to go to Michigan for my grades. So getting the 4 was actually, I felt pretty good. 4, what's a 4 or 5? So I got a little confused. It happens.
Same defense. Same time defense out. As a minute ago, Eli. Oh, here we go.
Oh, God.
We got a little video here. Yep. It's fourth quarter. He's saying fourth quarter. Fourth quarter.
How come I never got a chance to cue up some low lights of your guys' careers? So there's got to be a few in there. I mean, for God's sake.
So that was Tom Brady joining Peyton and Eli Manning on the Manning cast last night. Lots of more barbs as well. They gave him poop about the Jimmy Garoppolo video when they were winning the Super Bowl against the Seahawks and he was jumping up and down and not acknowledging Jimmy Garoppolo. They asked him why not. He said he adeptly dodged the question, but talked about how he's learned going forward to just give fist bumps, not high fives, because he doesn't want to be left hanging. And there was plenty of other great stuff inside there, but Yurko, you are not necessarily a fan of the Manning cast.
Well, I just don't like what it takes away from the broadcast. I mean, mm-hmm. You've got a broadcast. It's Monday Night Football. You want to feature what's happening there, but ESPN always wants to go about the business of cannibalizing their own product because they believe for one reason or another it creates more revenue for them at the end of the day, and that's all they really care about is money,
mm-hmm.
Not really the quality of what they're doing. So that's a problem for me philosophically. So I don't play into it. I don't participate in the tomfoolery and the chicanery. I won't do it. Me, I'll watch the game. That's all I'll watch. That's what I'm signed up for.
Sure.
All the other crappy channels with the coaches sitting around, smoking cigars, drinking scotch, and talking about the game, I don't care about.
That's fine.
I care about the broadcast. That's what I care about.
And I will admit that it placates to the football nerd in me who likes to listen to Peyton Manning and Eli break down things that I don't get from a lot of broadcasts. But I will admit to you that I agree. They are definitely taking away from the standard broadcast, Steve Levy, Louis Riddick, and Brian Griese. And that is definitely a disservice to them.
So the Twitch thing we did last year for the playoff game, that mm-hmm. wasn't us cannibalizing anything, one of our properties, because we don't care the NFL.
Correct.
So it was just us doing a little kind of sidecast and having a good time.
When we were in Carmen's backyard.
Exactly.
And Waddle were hanging out.
So if anybody wants to say, what's the difference between what you guys did last year, that's the difference.
Yeah, we weren't.
I'm not undermining one of my own products.
But I will say it was a great watch. I even asked the poll question last night. If Tom Brady were to ever retire and you could get all three in the same location, I think that's important. You need the Mannings together so you can cut down on the lag time. Would you pay anything additional to have the Manning cast with Brady calling a game of the week? I gave four options out there. What would you pay? 0, 69% said they would pay 0. Nice.
Yep.
Up to $199. That got 17% of the vote. 2% said they would pay $200 to $400. And 12%, believe it or not, said they would pay $400 or more for a Manning cast with Brady in the same location.
12% would pay $400 or more?
Yes.
To watch that?
Manning, yes.
Now, those are the idiots ESPN is looking for.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's exactly who they're looking
for.
And if
you want to put it together, one third of the people voting said they would pay something for the Manning and Brady
and
cast.
And that's exactly who they're looking for. They want those idiots that are willing to pay for that. So maybe ESPN knows what they're doing.
Listen, if they can get a little extra cash scratch for their broadcast, they might do it. We shall see what comes of it. Good kid. Thanks for allowing me to sit in for Carmen.
Thanks for jumping on board.
My pleasure. Thanks to Randy Merkin and J.R. Strauss for producing us behind the glass. Yurko, guess what? You get the final word, my friend.
Carmen and Yurko present today's final word.
Because you had to be a big shot, didn't you? You had to open up your mouth.
Today's final word.
You had to have the last word.
On Carmen and Yurko.
So I haven't watched. I'm a conscientious objector to the game.
Kick us out here.
To the show, whatever that is. Simple
game.
What's it called?
The Squid Game.
Squid Game.
That was the final word on Carmen and Yurko on ESPN 1000.